this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening we're going to have with us for the first hour Bob Chapman, and he's from, of course, the International Forecaster. And we're going to be talking about what's going on financially in our country and throughout the world. And, of course, those of you who listen to our programs regularly know that we believe that there was actually a manipulation of the stock market in preparation for the recent elections. And if that is true, it means that the stock market is really not a barometer of what's going on at all. It is being used to control our reality. In a similar matter, we believe that the price of oil was intentionally manipulated down in an effort to try to keep the Republicans in office. As it was, why, of course, the elections we had this last Tuesday were not certainly a reflection of the economy. It was not a reflection of the price of oil. It was a vote against the war in Iraq and holding the Republicans responsible. It wasn't a rejection of the principles the Republican Party stands on. It was a rejection of the fact that the Republican Party refuses to stand on its principles and was embracing illegal immigration, big spending, massive deficits, everything that Republicans were so critical of the Democrats for. And a lot of people saw the hypocrisy, but I think most people were concerned about the war. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens now, I'm sure. In my own heart of hearts, that we're not going to leave Iraq, at least any time in the very near future. And the Democrats will continue supporting the war in Iraq, more and more Americans and more Iraqis were going to continue dying in a war that was just sort of a mistake, shouldn't have been. Oh, shucks, we just got the wrong intelligence. And why did we attack them? Well, we're fighting terrorism. After all, we're fighting terrorism. That's why we're over in Iraq today, isn't it? Better to fight the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad than the streets of New York. And yet, if there is really a terrorist attack, a threat to America, with our borders wide open, with an organized catch-and-release program, in other words, if you catch somebody coming into our country illegally across the southern border, and they are actually from a Muslim or terrorist country, why, they catch them, and then they promptly release them. So, and tell them to come back in a month or two for a deportation hearing, and you'd never guess it, they don't come back for the deportation hearing. If we really were concerned about the threat of terrorism, why would the administration have such a lax attitude towards people from Islamic countries, potential terrorists, coming into America? And if there's really a threat to America, why has there been no attacks for 5 years? No major attacks. Or maybe nothing, we're being told, is true. Well, that is the background. Bob Chapman, thanks for being with us. Bob Chapman, are you there?
Be here. I certainly am.
All right, fine. How are you doing?
I'm listening to you very intently.
Well, of course, I noticed that the latest figures on unemployment, they say unemployment's dropping. We've got a wonderful economy. Is that really true?
Well, of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. You know that.
Well, I don't.
Well, you're one of the few people in America who know, because the Americans, even though they reacted against all the things that people in office were doing, like you just explained, one of the ones you missed was which I think is really what made major changes in the removal of incumbents from both parties, was the blatant corruption, which Democrats for years and years had a monopoly on. And now they are relatively good guys.
And of course, the earmarks, all that, the massive amounts of pork that they're doing, and a total violation of our Constitution, and to try to buy their re-election. I mean, we have some of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. today that money can buy.
Well, one of the things that really disturbed me, and I wrote about it today, and I haven't seen it anywhere in print except one other place, and that is, and this was so disappointing, Duncan Hunter, who is the head of, was the head of the Armed Services Committee, San Diego, and who gets more than 50% of the monies that he uses to get reelected or has in the past, he slipped a addition to the funding bill in the middle of the night. And I guess there were a few people who were on the Armed Services Committee who knew about it. And what it did is do away with Iraq's IG, the Inspector General. And this operation has been going for about 2 or 3 years. And they're really starting to clean up on these people, which are Halliburton, Bechtel, Parsons, and a raft of others. And, you know, where did the billions go? And they have filed numerous complaints with the Attorney General's office, and they refuse to do nothing. And so Duncan Hunter entered this addition to the bill that did away with this Inspector General as of next, the end of this coming, this fiscal year which we're in, next September 30th. And so Susan Collins from Maine, a Republican, says she's going to put legislation in and has co-sponsors to put this back in because Congress wanted to find out what was going on. And this was one of the ways that probably the only way they could do it because everybody in the administration was lying. And so, you know, these people, they just don't give up. And Hunter has said he's going to run for president. Well, I don't think I'd like a guy like that as president.
Well, maybe we noticed that Donald Rumsfeld's smiling all the time. I wonder if he's getting any of that money that's disappeared over there. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, just talking about the fact that billions and billions of dollars has disappeared over there in Iraq, and that Duncan Hunter, Congressman Duncan Hunter, really slipped something through in the middle of the night recently. There was a do-away with the Inspector General in Iraq, who was tracking down or trying to track down where all these billions of dollars have gone, and Duncan Hunter, Congressman Duncan Hunter, who wants to run for the presidency, slipped in legislation that nobody knew about to do away with the only investigation of where that money went. And we have to ask ourselves, why would he do something like that? So pick up the story. Any other things you'd like to talk about, Bob?
Well, the answer to that is the campaign contribution. And this campaign contribution thing has got to end. I mean, each congressman should get X amount of dollars, and that's it. And they run on their record or what, you know, they promise that they're going to do. And all the lobbying should be brought to a halt. The Abramoff scandals taught us that. And until that happens, we're going to continue with massive corruption.
Until we have moral people and men who fear God in an office, we're going to have massive corruption.
That's right. And it's very, very disappointing because he was in a position to do a lot of good. And what he's done is he has lost his credibility. And I don't think he's going to become president. And I haven't seen anybody else talk about it except one publication. And I, you know, where is the press? What are they doing? Are they hiding out?
Absolutely. They're not going to tell you the truth. You know that, Bob.
I mean, what a disgrace.
And if you have a reporter...
These people call themselves journalists.
Well, but you have a reporter out there who tells the truth. They're going to pull the story, or he's going to be letting know in uncertain terms that they don't want to go there. And I never forget when I ran for Congress, and I won the Republican primary. But it was delayed. There was about 2 weeks before they actually did the recount and determined that I'd won. And the reporter went to the editor of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, where I live, and said, well, aren't you going to put an article in that Dr. Monteith won the Republican primary? And they said, of course not. Well, what are you going to do? You want to keep your job? You keep your mouth shut. This is the way things are run. You don't expect fairness from the media, do you?
No, and I think we should all say thank God for the Internet and the fact that I couldn't reach the people that I do with my publication without it and without shortwave and some of the AM/FM stations. We couldn't get our message out, so at least some of the people know what's going on.
But at least we're reaching more people than we ever have before. You've been at this game as long as I have, Bob, and I'm really, in many respects, more optimistic than ever before, because at least we're reaching people who we couldn't previously. So we've got a lot to be thankful for, and it's going to be very... I just hope that we end up with 2 years of gridlock, and I hope that Democrats will start having some investigations of what's going on over in Iraq, and at least maybe we'll get some of the truth. At least we can get that information out. We certainly weren't going to get any truth with the Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate and the presidency.
Well, I think we're going to get those investigations.
I certainly hope so, and I hope we'll have an independent investigation of what happened on 9-1-1, although I suspect Nancy Pelosi, has already been bought and purchased and will do everything she can to block an effective investigation of what happened on that Tuesday morning.
Well, I think you're right, and the reason why is that the Mossad was involved in the operation, and she recently made a speech for AIPAC, which is the Israeli lobby in the United States. And they're under investigation, and two of their employees are under indictment for criminal activity like treason and stealing our secrets. And she's over there making speeches, telling people the people who are there, how great they are. So I don't hold out any hope for her.
Well, let's hope some of the old-line liberals there, the liberal Democrats, will at least insist on getting some sort of investigation going.
Well, I think they will, but I don't think you're going to see it on 9/11. There's too many people going to go down. There was a lot of people involved in that. That was a massive undertaking that took years of planning, and some 20 Muslims who supposedly were involved just didn't have the capability to do that, even if they were bright enough to do it.
All right, fine. Well, if certainly our intelligence agencies were involved, we don't know which one there are. There are 14 intelligence agencies. Most Americans couldn't name more than 5 of them.
Well, that's right. That's for sure.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the economy and what's going on, because certainly we find that General Motors is holding meetings over in Japan with Toyota and a couple of their automotive companies. Nobody knows what it's about. We understand that Ford's considering opening up plants in China. Certainly before long, probably next year, we'll begin to see the Chinese cars flooding into America from China. And they'll probably be very, very low price, and apparently the quality is not too bad. But I doubted quite the quality that they would have of the Japanese. But the cars, anyway, certainly we don't see anything very good on the horizon as far as the American economy. I noticed that the price of silver and gold seem to be going up quite dramatically here in the last couple of weeks. So what's really going on, Bob?
Well, gold came down the second week in May, from 7:30 down to 5:50, 60, somewhere down in there. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I told my readers it's time. time to buy again because this thing's going to go back up again. And lo and behold, we were right again. And I only have about 6 stock recommendations out there. And one of them just went from $1 to $5, I'm happy to say. Especially happy for the people who bought it, and lots of people did. But I've been watching very closely the Commitment of Traders report, which lists large speculators, small speculators, and commercials. And commercials are the people who really run the market, and they're on the inside, and they know, along with the people who are really in the employ of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury, and that's Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citicorp, Deutsche Bank, Morgan Stanley. And I watch them very closely and see whether they're long and short or short, because they're getting inside information. And all indications are, and of course the Commitment of Traders report comes out tomorrow, all indications are so far that they are going to stand by and watch gold go up, because gold is going to go up. And I think we'll see a pause at 660.70, which is, I don't know, 30-so dollars away. And I think it'll go back up to 730, but it won't stop. On the next run, I think you're going to see it go through 730 like it didn't exist, and I think that we'll go up and test 850, and that could be in the first quarter. And silver, of course, will go up to $19 to $25, somewhere up in there. And platinum and palladium will do well, and I expect over the next year the commodities will continue to do well. The commodities won't turn down until China drops to a GDP growth rate of around 4 to 5%. When that happens, the U.S. will be in a full-blown recession. Now, as far as I'm concerned, recession started in January of this year. They're just starting now to realize that we are in recession. You referred earlier to the unemployment numbers, the unemployment being 4.4%. Anybody who believes that needs to see their psychiatrist. The people are so professionals, are so outraged, finally, and I've been talking about this for years, about them rigging the statistics. Well, they went over the edge this time, and they changed the increase in employment numbers for August and September by like 150,000 a month.
No, don't totally think that, no, they were rigging. They were rigging the figures to make it look good for the Republicans going into the election.
Yeah, but that was a re-rig.
That's
a rig upon a rig.
Okay.
And they've lost all credibility. I saw Steve Leisman on CNBC. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he actually told the people the truth. He was so mad because these people use these figures thinking that they're true when they're not. Everything that comes out is a lie, and particularly the CPI with its substitution and hedonics. The CPI, the Consumer Price Index. Inflation is over 10% and has been for 4 years.
All right, well, I...
This thing is happening in Europe right now, too.
Well, when we get back, we'll start talking a little bit about what's going on in Europe. But I mean, I believe that the whole world is on the brink of financial disaster, but of course they're not going to tell you that. As you certainly read the papers, listen to most of the news today, they'll tell you, well, the economy is great and getting better. Isn't it wonderful the way things are going? But the truth of the matter is that there's never been any instance in all recorded history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system and kept inflating and inflating and inflating as we have and the world is doing, where that whole system has not eventually come cascading down. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Well, Bob, what's going on in Europe?
Well, first of all, today the Bank of England raised their prime rate, we'll call it that, and that's what the U.S. calls it, or they have a number of names for it, but interest rates went up a quarter of a point officially to 5%. They've had 57 consecutive quarters of growing GDP. Now, that is outrageous. I mean, I've never heard of that happening before. Now, what they've done over the past 3 years is what the Fed has been doing, increasing the money supply and the credit that's available. Now, the credit figure last month on a year-to-date basis and a year-to-year basis was 14.5%.
Now, could you explain to our listeners what that credit basis is? The term, I understand it, but explain to them, because this is such an important
issue. Well, it's all the credit that's issued by government and by banks and by the Federal Reserve to everybody. There are figures that aren't included in that, but generally speaking, that's what it is.
And it's liquidity. It's money that, even though it doesn't exist, it can still be bought and sold and utilized.
Well, the Fed creates credit and money out of thin air.
Right.
They have a monopoly to do that. The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express is. And it's just a gang, a cult of bankers who have a license to steal. And that happens in most countries. And it's the biggest scam in the history of mankind. And if you read some of Stan's books, you'll find that out. But the money and credit creation in Europe in the last year for all the countries has been phenomenal. Now, I expect that the European Central Bank will raise rates again probably next month to 3.5%. Now, that is to slow down the inflation in Europe. And they play with their figures as well. They're calling inflation 2.5%, 2.75%, and I can promise you it's higher. And they have a real estate boom in countries like Ireland and in England, particularly the southeast where London is, France and Spain in particular. Those are the real hot countries. One of the things that they made a mistake on when they formed the euro and the eurozone group was that they should have got their constitution first, and because they didn't do that, eventually the eurozone will break up and the euro will break up as well. But the worst thing about the euro system and the European Central Bank is that all the countries have to have the same interest rate. And so you've got Ireland and Spain booming, and you have other countries like Italy barely hanging on by their fingernails. And it doesn't work. Terrible, terrible mistake. And anyway, next year, we'll use Germany, which is the leader of the pack in Europe. Their growth this year was about 2.6%. Next year, it'll be probably 1.5%.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob Chapman is simply talking about what's going on in Europe, where, of course, you have certain countries like Ireland and Spain, where the economies are booming, and then you have other countries where things are, like Italy, where the country is just doing very, very poorly economically, and Germany, which has really been the bulwark of a European economy, this year has maybe 2.5%. You know, gross domestic product increase, and of course next year, Bob thinks it'll be what, about 1.5%?
Yeah, 1.5 to 1.7, and after that, it's just going to be the bottom fallout. And one of the things that Americans and most Europeans don't realize that the balance of trade, which Germany creates, one of the most effective exporters in the world, even though wages are very high, and that's because they have trade barriers, which have saved them a lot of grief. We don't have them. We let everybody do anything they want. And that trade balance has been carrying the rest of Europe. And that'll cease because 20% of the market for German goods is in the United States. And once the U.S. slows down, they're going to be hurting, but not hurting as much as Canada, which exports 84% of its exports to America. And Mexico, 86% of their exports go to America. And China, 40%. And Japan, 40%. So as we go downhill economically and run into financial troubles over the next few years, they're going to get hurt. And they don't have any domestic markets. The consumption basis in China is 32%. In America, it was 71. It's about 70 right now. So the Chinese continue to save their money. And in those other countries, it's relatively the same. Japan, savings go up and expenditures by consumers go down darn near every month. So they're not going to be there to take up the slack. I mean, that is for sure. And that's a cultural thing. And that's just the way it is. And so when the American engine slows down, the whole world is going to quiver. Because we are the doggy and they are the tails.
But of course, Bob, as long as the Federal Reserve keeps increasing credit and money, so that there's lots of money out there to spend, the American people are going to keep spending it, aren't they?
They surely are, up to a certain point. And they will create that money and credit up to a certain point as well. And we don't know what point that is, but sooner or later they're going to have to stop because we're going to have hyperinflation. Now, the trick is to find out when they go to stop. And the subscribers of the International Forecaster are going to know that because we quote M3 every month and nobody else does, except I think Walter Williams has started to put one together, but I haven't seen it. He's a wonderful economist, incidentally. And as soon as we see those figures change, and then the central banks, cut back and the creation of money and credit, we'll know that we got a year until deflation takes over. They will have thrown in the towel. And that's very important because in the meantime, gold and silver-related assets are going to go ballistic. I mean, we're going to have stocks that are going to go from $1 to $50. Guaranteed to happen before. Why shouldn't it happen again? You're going to have gold coins, numismatic coins, that are going to go from $500 to $15,000. Think about that. And that whole market is slow and has been for like a year and a half, like it didn't exist. And it's because people are listening to the news and the government, and they don't understand. They're so confused, they don't know what to do. And they're missing this wonderful opportunity to keep their assets together, never mind make money. I mean, all you want to do is keep what you've got. If you happen to make some money, that's great. My subscribers have made piles of money. But that's not why I have them doing what they're doing. It's to save their bacon, so to speak.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. And of course, when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about how, if you're interested, you can get a trial copy of the International Forecaster, which I get, and certainly twice a week. And I always, of course, I look forward to reading it. Bob really provides so much information you're not going to get elsewhere, probably 30 pages twice a week. Keeps you busy reading it, but information you're going to need if you hope to have any hope of surviving in the difficult times that lie ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And, Bob, certainly what's happening to the stocks of silver throughout the world? Certainly, I mean, we keep hearing they're about 100 million ounces or something like that. And it seems to remain fairly constant. They seem to be, using some of it, but it always seems to be replenishing itself. And it doesn't look right now as if there's any real shortage of silver out there that's going to drive the price up. What are your thoughts?
Well, silver is a byproduct of other mining. And 70-75% of the silver that's recovered each year comes from usually copper mines and lead and zinc. And zinc happens to be a very hot item along with nickel and copper nowadays because of the extensive use by manufacturers, particularly China and other Asian nations. And I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows, how much above-ground silver there is, but there isn't much. If I had to guess, with the shortages that we have each year, that's silver used versus silver production, and the difference has to be made up of from inventory, and that inventory is dwindling down. And I don't know what it is, and nobody else does. I know it's in COMEX, but, you know, who knows what claims there are on the silver in COMEX or on CBOT now or whatever. And so over the next couple of years, the inventory in silver is going to dwindle down to just about nothing. And so the leverage in silver is absolutely enormous. 850 gold would easily bring $25 silver, which is double what it is now. And as far as gold is concerned, I see that three nations, it's in the latest issue of the Forecaster. I have to apologize to the subscribers because I'm sending them three issues this week, and I'm making them work harder to understand what's going on in the world. But anyway, it's in there. There's one mining company, I think it's Newmont, and one of their mines, Cerro something else, in South America, produces 300,000 ounces a year, and they're delivering that to Germany and two other countries, and there's others, I think, that we don't know about. That's because they've sold the gold, or they leased it out and they can't get it back.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was saying that one of the larger gold mines in South America, he thinks is Newmont, has actually sold a tremendous amount of gold to a certain central banks. Are these the central banks you're speaking of in Germany and elsewhere in Europe?
Yeah, that's right.
And so these central banks are buying gold, but they've been selling gold all along. This is what they've been telling us.
It's my suspicion that is the situation, and that is they're getting buying gold to replenish that which they've sold, and they're trying to hide that from their people now.
But they've been selling at lower prices. Why would you, these are pretty smart people. Why would you sell low and buy high? Or is it that they
manipulate the price? That's why, and they don't care what they sell it for, as long as they keep the price down. Because if they can keep the price down, then people don't think that there's a problem. They say to themselves, "Gee." Gold isn't going up, so I guess everything's okay. And so they're buying this back. There's two things here. Number one, they're probably out of gold. Number two, that gold is not going to go into the marketplace. It's 300,000 ounces that is not going to go into the market. So it's very bullish for gold. Now, the selling that we just saw, I saw that Germany said that they had been swapping, but they wouldn't say with who. Now, the only reason you swap gold is if you have undeliverable gold. Now, the only country in the world that has not good delivery gold is the U.S. And why do they have that? They have that because they melted coins in 1934 and 35. And so they're saying to the Germans, look, we're going to get this stuff refined, but you send it, you know, we've sold it, and we want you to make delivery for it, and we'll make it up to you. And it also tells me that the U.S. government is very nearly out of gold. I don't know how much non-deliverable melt that they have, but they've got some probably. But they're coming to the bottom of the barrel. Otherwise, they wouldn't be selling it and selling it by swapping. And incidentally, Britain and France have made swaps with them before, which I recently found out. And so I think gold is going to explode here, and I think it'll take silver and platinum and palladium with it. And it's going to be pretty wild. And those of you who are not in gold and silver-related assets, you're making a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake.
All right, Bob. Well, let's tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster if they'd like to read it or how they can reach you.
Well, before I tell people that, I want to tell them that I've been doing this for 47 years. I do it because I like to do it. I have a publication because I like writing and I like helping people. And we don't have any financial interest other than the publication. And I don't buy stocks, so there's no conflict. I don't even have a stock brokerage account. And with that said, you can get an introductory copy either by email or in hard copy. We publish an email two or three times a week. We'll say twice. Sometimes we miss one. And we always publish twice a month in the hard copy. And it's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And that toll-free number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And for those of you who would like to visit our site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. And if you'd like to email us, that address is international_, and the underscore is like a dash, but it's lower down. It looks like a line on a line. So it's international_forecaster, forecaster, at Yahoo, yahoo.com.
All right, Cynthia, as we watch what's happening to gold and silver, it's really rather shocking. You know, gold has been up very strongly this last week, and silver has been up even more significantly, in my estimation. So it looks like we're on the verge of something big, and I often like to use the price of gold and silver as the analogy of the canary in the mine shaft. And when you see the canary drop over dead, why, you know that you're in real trouble going down that mine shaft. On the other hand, of course, when you see the price of gold and silver going up, and going up without explanation, you know that something big is afoot financially throughout the world. So with that as a background, what are some of the other issues we know? Bob, what's happening to the housing market? Is it continuing to contract?
It is. Median prices in some areas are holding in, but that's not going to last, because if the European Central Bank and United Kingdom are raising their interest rates, they're competing for buyers of their treasury paper and other instruments. And The United States is going to have to raise their rates. They can't lower them. And what's happened is that the stock market and all of those so-called experts, they believe that interest rates are going down. If interest rates go down, the dollar will plunge through 80. Now, that's a dollar index. It's around 84.5 right now. It could clob it today, but I didn't see the index as final. But we'll say 85 less a little. And if it breaks 80, it'll be caused by interest rates that go down. So even if they keep interest rates unchanged, it'll be a negative for the dollar. And there's been statements by the Kuwait and by the UAE, which is the United Arab Emirates. Today the Chinese said again that they're diversifying out of the dollar. So the handwriting is all over the wall. I mean, you just got to look and you can see. So we have a situation where interest rates are not going to go down. If they do, it's suicidal. And they probably will go up. And that will make things far more difficult in the real estate market. Now, what the Federal Reserve has been doing is been increasing money and credit by about 11.5% every month for the last 5 years. And I found out recently that they do a lot of what they do in the market through what they call the repo pool. And how that works very simply is that the Fed creates money out of thin air. They go to the banks within their system and say, today we want $10 billion, and here's the money, and we're going to buy treasuries from you. And they don't go anywhere. They just go from one account to another. And they, in turn, direct the banks to give that money as credit for 21 agents who act for the Fed, who are brokerage houses. And every morning at 7 o'clock, they have a conference call, and they tell these houses how they want them to use the money in manipulating the markets. Well, it's illegal for the U.S. Treasury to do that, but they started doing it. This Paulson is a piece of work. And they've started to do repos, just like the Fed. They are flooding the economy with money and credit. And it's going to keep on going on until this thing blows sky high. And so, you know, my estimates of $3,500 to $4,000 and over $100 for silver and for gold may be very, very conservative. We are heading into a maelstrom, and it's just begun, and it'll last for several years, if not a long, long time.
Well, we see that China has about $1 trillion in reserves. About 70% of that's in American dollars. Could they be holding as much as $600 or $700 billion of American bonds? Could that be right, or is that an exaggeration?
No, that's they say that the figure is like $357 billion, but I don't believe that. They're buried in the paper, and I think the reason that they are, just like the Japanese, they made a deal with the United States government. We'll open our markets up, let you do anything you want, sell what you want, and as long as you hold the paper and don't dump it on the market. And if you want to stop buying, that's okay. If you want to ease some paper up, that's okay, but just don't destroy the game. And that means that China's in control, and Japan's in control. In reality, because if they sell, the U.S. is in deep trouble. They'll go bankrupt. On the other hand, what will the losses be? Well, let's say they're 50%. That means the Chinese and the Japanese lose 50% of the value of the dollar that they're holding. And that's not very good. But that's the price that they paid to get into our market and destroy it.
Well, I think that we're in very, very difficult times. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Bob, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But my fear is, of course, that there are people working at the highest levels of our government that do march to a different drumbeat, that do dream a different dream, And I really believe that they are doing what they're doing intentionally to destroy this system. Now, there's some people maybe who are just trying to make the system work, but I believe that there's some people who realize that the only way to really, of course, accomplish the goal and force America into this one world government and new world religion that they dream of will be to destroy our economy. Do you think it is possible that there could be anybody out there who is intentionally doing the wrong thing to put us into a position where the whole house of cards had come tumbling down and wipe out the savings of people all throughout our land?
Absolutely. There's thousands of them. And they belong to the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission, the Royal Society, and the Illuminati. And that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, just look at free trade and globalization. I mean, what is that? It's a transference of wealth from one place to another. We're deliberately destroying our own markets and we're subsidizing the world. I mean, what madness is that? Our country was made great by using tariffs to keep cheap goods out of the country. So if you could make a broom in China and for 50 cents and sell it for a dollar in America, and American brooms cost a dollar to make and they sell them for $1.50, they'd have a 50% tariff on the brooms from China in order to make American brooms competitive. And that's the way it is. That's the way it should be.
And you have to defend your own markets. You have to defend the jobs of our own people. But the elitists have no loyalty to America. I mean, they don't care that the people here are being impoverished. They don't care that the elderly will lose the value of their life savings and their pensions and their annuities and their bank accounts and their bonds and their stocks. They don't care about that because their loyalty is to this internationalist dream. And so I think till people understand that there is no other logical explanation for what we're doing, they intend to destroy the manufacturing base of America. They know exactly what they're going to do. You know, I think it's so interesting, Bob, that apparently Airbus is thinking of starting to do production over in communist China. If they do, can Boeing be far behind?
Well, Boeing is already over there.
Are they really?
And all that production is going to be done over there in the next several years. And they still do the planning and things like that. But that's already happened. It happened about 5 years ago.
That'll surely wipe out.
Airbus can't compete with German and European rates and of wages, and so they kind of stuck. So they've had to do the same thing that Boeing did. One of the problems with Airbus was that each country was given certain parts of the plane to make. And what happened was that they were all using different programs and the plane didn't fit together. It was like a jigsaw puzzle that was supposed to work that didn't. And it's just an effort in madness. It's so messed up. And that's why they can't make the delivery schedules and won't for another 3 or 4 years. And that's why FedEx switched an order to Boeing today or from Airbus. And that just shows you, you know, they're trying to put together all these cultures. And, you know, I've lived in Europe for many, many years. I speak five languages. And so I know these people very well, each and every country. And they're tribes. They're white tribes. And there's no other way to describe it. And they're all distinctly different. They haven't changed in the last 5,000 years. And they're not going to change. They're not going to get along with each other. They don't want to work with each other. I mean, you've got a European Union, and you've got a euro, and people can move from Italy to Germany to work, or from France to Germany to work, and they don't do that. They don't want to learn another language, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that people are coming from Eastern Europe, and they're flocking to Western Europe, but most of those people have some money already. But it's just like a bouillabaisse, which is a fish soup with all kinds of different kinds of fish in it. And that's what Europe is like, and it's a mess.
All right, fine. We've got Will calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. Did you have a question for Bob?
Yes, I certainly do. I have a question in regards to whether or not Bob thinks that it might be possible that we could have pockets of limited prosperity scattered about throughout the United States, centered about key company headquarters or places where there will be continued progress, growth, and change, even in the face of a financial decline.
All right, fine. Bob, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that's possible. There will be situations like that, particularly in agriculture. And that's because we've had a lot of droughts, and they're going to have to catch up on inventory. And also, the use or consumption of grains and beans is continuing to expand enormously.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Bob, go ahead and finish answering Will's question. But hey, what about industrial? Would there be a few areas where industries will be prospering?
Yeah, and I can't explain the industrial part of it. All I can say is that, yes, that is possible. And there will be people who make things, people who invent things that will do okay during hard times. But I envision, like in the real estate industry, those who own homes, one-third of them going bankrupt. I envision 30 to 40% of Americans being without work. I think it's going to be worse than the 1930s because it's a tremendous leverage in the housing market and the tremendous amount of money and credit that's been created. I think that the value of almost everything except gold will probably go down 70 to 90%, and that includes real estate and the value of buildings and everything else. And I think that once gold hits its peak, it'll probably come off about 20% and retain about 80% of its value. And so it's going to be very, very difficult. There's a lot of answers I don't have, and we won't know until we get there.
And I think that what we're going to see, though, is really a two-tiered society, very rich, very poor, and there'll be a few people in between, but I think the majority of the middle class is going to be wiped out. Those who are not making their preparation today. Anything else you wanted to ask about Will?
No, that'll wrap it up in a good answer, too. And thank you very much, Dr. Stan and Bob.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Thank you.
Will calling from Missouri. Well, Bob, you got about 1 minute to wrap up this evening's program. The hour goes by so very, very rapidly.
Well, I think one more aspect to that, if those things happen, is the social implications are going to be overwhelming. And quite frankly, I wouldn't want to be rich because you're going to be a big target. And all those people who have created this monster, they better go into hiding because there's going to be a lot of people looking for them. And for you people out there who haven't done so already, get rid of your revolving debt, your credit card debt, your vehicle debt. One of you is going to be unemployed next year of the two breadwinners, and you want to be able to keep your home and be as conservative as possible. We're coming into some really rough times.
Well, I agree with you. And Bob, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you back here a little later this month.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a joy being on with you.
God bless. Bye-bye. All right,
bye-bye.
Fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our program with Bob Chapman. I always do. These are exciting times. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is supported by the people who listen to it, primarily supported by our listeners. And so if you're out there and you believe that you're going to hear things here that you're not going to hear elsewhere, and you want to keep us here on the air, reaching out across America, educating the remnant, which is what I think we're doing, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'd love to have you consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. For information on what we're talking about financially, we actually have put together a syllabus. It's called Financial Tsunami, and the talk that goes with that is available either on DVD or on video. And then, of course, we have the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. We have his books on gold for investment and gold, I've forgotten the other one, the gold for trade, I think it is. And then, of course, the book, which is one of my favorites, just a little book. It's called Fiat Money Inflation in France. And it's the story of what happened in France after the revolution in 1789, when the French government tried to do exactly what the American government is doing today. And the similarities between what happened in France at that time and what's going on in America today is rather striking. Oh, we're a lot more sophisticated at this time. We have all sorts of computers, but mankind hasn't changed, and men are simply as manipulable today as they were at that time. And you see the moral degradation that a false affluence leads to. And then, of course, what eventually happens is they end up in a total dictatorship under a man named Napoleon Bonaparte. Fiat Money Inflation in France was written 150 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who was at Cornell University. I think he was the dean. He was talking about what had happened in between 1789 and about 1800. A must reading. It's a short little book, but there's a tremendous amount of knowledge there, and you can get that with the book by Frederick Bastiat, a book that was written in 1848 called The Law. Two classic books would have really helped you to grasp what's going on today, because those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana said that, but it's as true today as it was then. And also remember what Daniel Webster said. There is nothing so powerful as truth, and often nothing so strange. And, of course, Lord Byron, a few years later, was to say, 'Tis strange but true. For truth is always strange, stranger than fiction. Well, you need to understand what's going on. And if you can get my talk on the financial tsunami, available either on DVD or in video, but you need to get the syllabus that goes with that so you can begin to put all the pieces together and understand what a hedge fund is, and understand the various terms that they use today as they're discussing what M1 is, what M2 is, what M3 is, and what the derivative market really is, and certainly what the carry trade is, and how all of these things work together, and how they've been able to create money out of nothing and convince people it had value. We also have a little pamphlet. It's inexpensive. It's called The History of Money. It's about five of my newsletters dealing with finances. A tremendous amount of information there we put together into one little pamphlet called The History of Money. All of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, you can go to our website of radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, your job is to tell other people about what's going on. And you're welcome, of course, to pull down anything off of our website and copy it, to copy our newsletters, to distribute them on your own, as long as you let them know where they came from. Our job is to try to educate the remnant, those people who God will bring before us to listen, and perhaps some of them will believe what we're saying, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills, overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, tonight our guest is Arthur Bernclough from Veterans for Constitutional Law. We're going to be talking about the plight of the veterans here in the United States, the veterans of the past wars, the veterans of the present war. And we're seeing an awful lot of young men coming home without their arms, without their legs, blinded, crippled. And, of course, everybody applauds our veterans who are fighting for us. The problem is the politicians really don't care. They say all the right things, but when it comes to paying the veterans for their disability and helping them throughout the rest of their lives, there is a callous indifference on the part of the Veterans Administration, and fortunately, we have people like our guest this evening, Arthur Bernclough, who's dedicated to being there to help the veterans, who understands how the system works. So before we get to Arthur, I wanted to share with you one of my favorite poems. It's called The Unknown Soldier. There's a graveyard near the White House where the unknown soldier lies. And the flowers there are sprinkled with the tears from mother's eyes. I stood there not so long ago with roses for the brave, and suddenly a voice spoke out from the grave. "I am the unknown soldier," the spirit voice began, "and I think I have a right to ask some questions man to man. Are our buddies being taken care of? Was their victory so sweet? Is that big reward you offered selling pencils on a street? Did they really win the freedom they battled to achieve? Do you still respect that Croix de Guerre above the empty sleeve? Does a golden star in the window now mean anything at all? I wonder how my old girl feels when she hears a bugle call. And that baby who sings, 'Hello, Central, give me no man's land,' can they really replace her daddy with a military band? I wonder if the profiteers have satisfied their greed. I wonder if a soldier's mother ever is in need. I wonder if the killing who planned it all are really satisfied. They played the game of checkers and 11 million died. I am the unknown soldier. And maybe I died in vain, but if I were alive and my country called, I'd do it all over again." And I think that in many respects, reflects the courage of men who've gone overseas to fight for our country. But are they well cared for? Are they really appreciated when they come home? Or are they a problem to the politicians who want the money that is in the should be going to the veterans for their own use, for their own perks, for their own benefits, for their own families? Is there really concern among the politicians for the courageous men that they send overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die? Well, that is the background, Arthur. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
That is very touching, Dr. Stan, just listening to that. And I've got to think back to my original outfit when I went into the service. There were over 300 of us, and today we have left out of the over 300, we have 7 of us left. That's a terrible, terrible statistic.
I know it is. Well, I appreciate everything you're doing to try to help those veterans, not only the wars that you fought, but then, of course, the veterans that for the first Gulf War and the veterans of the second Gulf War. And I think you're going to be fascinated this evening to hear some of the plans that they have, what they intend to do to the veterans. And you have to understand, you have a Veterans Administration whose goal is not to help the veterans, but, of course, to give them just as little as they possibly can.
Oh, yes.
And try to give this impression that they really care. Well, Arthur, you pick up the story.
Well, when we talk about the Veterans Administration, this is the predatory agency that has been set up by our government 75 years ago to dispense benefits to veterans, such as disability compensation, hospitalization, schooling, and so forth. And we look at the VA, and we say the VA motto is deny, delay, and deceive. When called by our country, we answered. When the nation needed the wall of defense, we stood firm. When asked to give our lives, we were ready. And now when we need help, what is the response? It's deny, delay, and deceive. This month, we celebrated, our government celebrated, not the veterans, but the government celebrated the 75th anniversary of the Veterans Administration. And many speakers, congresspersons and government officials, are proclaiming and lauding the wondrous accomplishments of the VA and individual VA officials, even while that agency is under fire and growing demand for thorough investigation and restructuring. And Congress has just been given an in-your-face treatment of the very VA delay, denial, and deceit that veterans have been complaining about for over 75 years. Congress and a nation have just witnessed not one or two, but three successive VA breaches of confidence data security that endangered disabled veterans and active duty alike. And the latest one is the New York Veterans Administration Hospital in Manhattan. Just had another laptop stolen out of there, which is providing medical data, social security data, and hospitalized patients in the New York area. And this is the third time. And we'd like to know what is being done about this, except for lip service that's being given to the veterans. It's just incredible that they are getting away with this, and nothing is being done about the security of people's records. And Congress and the nation have just witnessed this, and it's endangered disabled veterans and active duty troops alike during a time of war. And let's count just a few of the most major VA documented violations over the last 75 years.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Arthur Bernklau. All right, Arthur, go right ahead.
Okay, let's count just a few of the most major VA documented violations over the last 75 years. The VA has been and remains in the hot seat for refusal to accept, diagnose, or treat for post-traumatic stress disorder. Even though there is a congressional mandate to do this, they haven't done it.
Now, would that be for the Korean War? Would that be for the Vietnam War? Would that be the Second World War or the present war?
This is for, they used to call it in the Second World War shell shock.
Right.
But this is for primarily Korea, Vietnam, and now Iraq and Afghanistan.
Have they ever accepted responsibility for the Agent Orange that they used there to poison our troops?
Well, they have a certain list of presumptive diseases, and it took, on a lot of these, it took 25 years and court decisions for them to recognize most of these.
No,
and they still keep fighting it.
Do they recognize Agent Orange at the present?
Yes, they do now.
All right.
They do now, but they will battle you to the end, and eventually, probably a year or two before you die, they'll give in, and they'll say, oh, yeah. You got this as a result of your service. And the VA, again, they're in the hot seat for refusal to accept, diagnose, or treat Agent Orange chemical exposure. Also, they're in the hot seat for sexual harassment and abuse of veteran patients at multiple hospital facilities, misplacing, misaccounting for millions of dollars of congressional veterans funding, concerted genocide of veterans by government direction, mishandling of medical research programs, falsification of medical research records, murders of veterans as test subjects in medical research programs, systemic abuse of veterans' patients' rights, systemic abuse of veterans' United States Code Title 38 rights. Title 38 is what governs the veterans on their benefits. They very often tell a veteran, you don't have constitutional rights, you have Title 38. Systemic abuse of veterans' civil rights, systemic denial of medical evaluations for veterans, required presidential directive. Now, when I'm saying systemic denial of medical evaluation for veterans, recently we had a head of the VA, Mr. Principi, got himself $250,000 bonus one day before signing and taking office at the VA. He got $250,000 bonus from his own company, QTC, in Diamond Bar, California, and they do medical evaluations for the VA and government agencies. Now, they're also doing medical evaluations for returning troops coming from overseas, and they bill the United States government $495 and change for each medical evaluation, whereas if the medical evaluation is done in-house at the Veterans Administration Hospital, the government is billed $89.80 as done by a doctor at the Veterans Hospital. Now, these veterans have been denied an evaluation by an MD. It's being done by the clerks at QTC, and it's being done at 500% more than it would cost if it was done in the hospital. And this is what Mr. Principi has done. He has gotten them a contract. He's quadrupled the contract and has gotten them $1.2 billion for his own company. And this is just one of the things. And again, we go to...
$1.2 billion?
Billion.
Well, that's pretty good money. And then he goes to work, after being there, he goes to work for the Veterans Administration?
Yes. He went to work for the Veterans Administration. He's no longer there now. He was relieved of his, actually forced to resign because of the problems with depleted uranium. It came to fact that him and the administration were hiding the facts on depleted uranium for over 5 years. And scientific facts came in from the doctors in Europe and the scientists in Europe on depleted uranium, Mr. Principi was in the hot seat, and he was forced to resign his job. And they hired Mr. Nicholson, who was a very successful real estate developer, and the head of the Republican National Committee, and Mr. Nicholson was hired to do the job for the VA. Now, on other abuses, what they are doing here, there is a systemic denial of medical treatment to veterans. There is a refusal to fully enact congressional mandates to treat veterans suffering from traumatic brain injury. As everybody knows, these roadside bombs are causing one concussion after another, and there is many, many brain injuries that are not being treated. They're refusing to treat most of these brain injuries, and they're discharging these people right out of the service without treating them for the brain injuries. Now, there's also intentional infliction of emotional duress and harassment of multiple individual veterans until those veterans suffered resulting life-threatening medical events. Also, improper or falsified oversight responsibilities relating to VA-funded state or private veterans care facilities. I'm talking about their nursing homes. That's a system, that's a sewer. Systemic denial of proper radiation exposure diagnosis and treatment. We're talking again about DU, depleted uranium. Systemic denial and stopping Veterans Administrative remedy and access to the courts with their legal complaints and petitions for redress of grievance. In other words, the VA system of adjudication on disabilities and injuries, They're not giving you access to get into the courts. You have to take them into the courts on due process violations. You have to take them in on violations of your constitutional rights. You've got to take them in on RICO charges, racketeering influence corruption organization. You've got to take them in on malpractice. If you go to take them in on your injury, your case is going to be remanded right back to the Veterans Court. And the Veterans Court, since being created in 1988 and has seen 18,000 cases go before that, we have a grand total of 190-some-odd veteran wins out of 18,000. We're talking about a little over 1%. And if you're shocked at those figures, you can imagine how shocked the veterans are when they go to this veterans court expecting to win with a beautiful case, and they get a turn down or a remand, and they get one remand after another.
Well, now, Arthur, basically, if you apply for a veteran's disability or pension, ordinarily, Chris, you don't go directly to this court, don't you? Go through regular channels, and then you only go to the court if you're turned down?
Exactly. Okay. You go first for a regional hearing, and then you have to go apply to get into the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, or they'll give you a traveling board, and sometimes it'll take you 2 to 3 years to get into that Board of Veterans Appeals. And then most of the time, if you don't get a direct turndown, you'll get a remand, sending your case back to the regional office, and you can go up 4, 5, 6, 7 times back and forth. Veterans call this the rat wheel. We call it the rat wheel. We say their motto is deny, delay, and deceive. And the courts are something that we can get into, and usually when a veteran gets his case into a real court, he's got to get it in through the back door by, let's say, due process violation, again, constitutional violations, malpractice, RICO. Once he gets it into the court, he stands a good chance of winning.
But, of course, he's in the regular administrative procedure of the Veterans Administration. The system is rigged, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they'll keep him going 30 to 40 years on their rat wheel. And also, we've got, like, Gestapo-like oppression of news journalists who expose VA violations, Nazi-like retaliation, oppression, persecution, and disappearance of vocal veterans' rights activists, systemic deceit and outright lies to Congress and the federal records about multiple congressionally mandated programs and report responsibilities. And there's so much more to the list of rampant violations of law as to make any cognizant citizen wonder why this one agency is allowed to continue operations totally unchecked and with absolutely no oversight balance from Congress. And for crying out loud, we spent millions and millions of dollars fruitlessly attempting to impeach a president for sexual indiscretion, while the VA is allowed to abuse and murder the nation's heroes by the thousands every year. And now the Hill, Washington, D.C., now celebrates the 75th anniversary of this rogue criminal organization known as the Veterans Administration. And I ask you, America, I ask all you Americans listening, where is your voice of outrage? Where is your voice of outrage? And this is only
go ahead.
This is only one thing. We have something now that they're trying to do. The Veterans Administration, with the help of certain people in Congress, are trying to buy out disabled veterans. There is a politically stacked Veterans Disability Commission, and they're very carefully looking at lump-sum buyouts of veterans' disability payments.
I think it's important, Arthur, that people understand that a veteran then will get a disability, 10, 20, 50, 90%, 100% for
yep.
life, and they want to buy them out at, what, 20, 30 cents on the
30%
dollar?
Of what they would get the rest of their lives.
And, of course, it may be very appealing to veterans who, you know, need the money, but what about the future?
Well, that's it. That's the whole thing. It's appealing to a lot of the veterans who need the money, but they're not thinking of the future. They're just thinking of buying their groceries and taking care of their families right now. And let me tell you where this all comes from. If you recall, Dr. Stan, fiscal conservatives called David Stockman. You remember that name?
Sure do, right?
They called him the budget whiz, and they rallied around his concept of a smaller government, which was enshrined in the phrase starving the beast. Now, Stockman was the director of the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, and OMB is the one who pulls the strings for the VA. The VA is not the VA's boss. The boss of the VA is the Office of Management and Budget. Now, David Stockman pulled the strings during the Reagan administration and is well remembered for labeling military retirement pay as scandalous, calling it a dangerous drain on the economy. Now, Stockman, he then proposed lump-sum buyouts of military retirement pay because he deemed it as less expensive to pay once than to pay for life. He even toyed with the idea of buyouts for Social Security payments, but they never even attempted to do that. Stockman's buyouts never happened. None of his buyouts ever happened. This was just his philosophy and his plan, and it never happened. But his cost-cutting ideology, it lives on today in the person of arch-conservative Grover Norquist. Are you familiar with that name, Dr. Stan?
Yes, I know him personally.
Oh, okay. Grover Norquist, who urges the current administration to get government down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub. Ridiculous as this may sound, that's the philosophy here. Now, President George W. Bush, while spending hundreds of billions of dollars on the war in Iraq, is echoing the Stockman-Norquist mantra. Now, President Bush often speaks of controlling spending on entitlement programs and lumps Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans benefits under the entitlement umbrella by consistently using them in the same sentence. The campaign of disinformation is used to sell the concept that all three of these programs are some kind of welfare and are out of control and therefore should fall under a sharp budget knife.
Well, of course, now, Arthur, as far as the certainly the Medicaid and is a welfare program entirely
yes.
different than certainly is it the obligation of the federal government to take care of the veterans. That's their responsibility. But it is certainly nowhere in the Constitution is the responsibility of the federal government to provide welfare benefits for the rest of the people.
No, you're right about that.
And, of course, this is the whole idea. We'd like to cut government back. But I think as far as the veterans are concerned, they're in a category by themselves.
Of course.
And, of course, they are expendable because they're not that large a voting bloc. And, of course, go right ahead with the story.
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to lump all three of these together, Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans benefits, and saying they've got to go under the budget knife. Now, this ignores the reality that Medicare is an insurance program, and veterans disability compensation is provided to those who have been wounded or injured while serving the country. The Veterans of Foreign Wars has labeled White House veterans' budget proposals as a disgrace and a sham. It's about time they opened up their mouth and criticized the government. People like the VFW, the DAV.
Hold that talk right there, Arthur, please.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Arthur is certainly talking about the effort, of course, on the part of the administration to buy out the disability payments. In other words, you're a veteran, you're disabled, you are not going to be able to work, and you're going to get a 50-75% disability. They will offer you a lump sum payment, and of course, people desperate for money may very well take that, but when they do, of course, then they have no longer a claim for disability. So pick the story up there.
Not only that, but they're not going to be treated at the hospital anymore.
Right.
Now, Peter Galen, the Director of Healthcare Benefits of the American Legion, testified before Congress that the Bush administration is trying to balance the budget on the back of America's disabled veterans. Now, the Stockman-Norquist philosophy has trickled down to the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs is Jim Nicholson, who is a multi-millionaire land developer and, again, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. Nicholson has consistently asked for less funding than the VA needs to treat eligible veterans, even to the point of faking budget numbers. So it's not surprising that one of Stockman's little-noticed recommendations has caught the eye of Nicholson and other conservative political appointees who run the VA. Stockman proposed the buyout of VA disability compensation. Now, key to the argument for the buyouts is a report from the VA's Office of Inspector General, which recommended that the VA revise disability rating criteria to reflect expected lifetime impairment so that the VA could offer lump sum payments to veterans. Now, the VA is the second largest government agency with a budget of over $80 billion for the fiscal year 2007. The largest portion of the VA budget goes to disability compensation for veterans wounded or injured while on military active duty. Lump sum buyouts of VA disability compensation could save the government billions of dollars every year. Now, last week, the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission, you've heard me mention them before, Dr. Stan, VDBC, they met in Washington, D.C. That's the group that Bush started. The Republican Party has appointed 8 people, and the Democratic, 9 people, and the Democrats have appointed 4 to this committee. Now, last week, they met in Washington, D.C., and once again, they took up the issue of lump sum buyouts. The VDBC was created by the Bush administration in 2003 and tasked with determining whether the death or disability of a veteran should be compensated and at what level, if any. The 13-member VDBC, it's a politically stacked deck with 9 members being appointed by the Republican politicians. And I can tell you, the 4 members appointed by the Democrats, they are just as worthless as the other 9. And they asked me to be on this commission, and I said, there's no way I can work with these people. Not at all. I turned them down. I was asked by Nancy Pelosi's office. And Secretary Nicholson supported the buyout concept in a response to the Inspector General's report, saying that the VA will review prior VA studies concerning lump sum payments to veterans with disability ratings and support the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission as it considers this public policy issue. Now, the VDBC has tasked the Center for Naval Analysis, the CNA, with studying the concept of lump sum buyouts. In the CNA's literature review, they write of substantial potential savings associated with a lump sum disability settlement in both terms of reduced debt cost and administrative burden. Now, there's a great deal of support on Capitol Hill for the lump sum buyouts, and leading the charge is a fellow you've heard me mention, Representative Steve Beyer, Republican of Indiana. He's the chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and it looks like he's out now, since even though he won his re-election, there's going to be a Democratic chairman. We don't know what the Democratic chairman is going to do, but Steve Beyer has been, shall we say, playing ball with the Veterans Disability Commission and Mr. Bush. Now, Steve Beyer was appointed when they had a decent chairman by the name of Chris Smith out in New Jersey. And he appointed Steve Beyer. He kicked Steve Smith out of the he kicked Chris Smith out of the job because he felt Chris Smith would be too liberal to veterans. And Steve Beyer has got a I would say a psychopathic hatred toward veterans. Mr. Beyer was a reserve JAG officer, which is a lawyer in Gulf War I, has not seen one moment of combat. Mr. Beyer and I have been at odds for several years now.
All right, fine. We just hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment or two with Arthur Byrne Cloud. Here we're talking about the situation in the plight of the veterans, and so many of them may very well be talked into accepting a lump sum payment, but then, of course, they've lost any claim for future benefits. Thank you. All right, Arthur, pick the story up there.
Okay, now Mr. Beyer sees the buyouts as a logical cost-cutting move, and when it comes to the work of the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission and what cost-cutting moves that they should study, Beyer has stated, I think everything should be on the table, but there is opposition. Not one veteran service organization is in favor of the move. The American Legion, arguably the most conservative veterans organization, has reminded its members that Chairman Beyer and other government officials have publicly expressed their desire to use the VDBC as a vehicle to institute radical changes in the VA disability system that would negatively impact and restrict entitlement to benefits for a large number of veterans. Now, this statement from the American Legion can only be labeled prophetic, as the VDBC ponders lump sum buyouts of VA disability payments. Now, how would the lump sum buyouts work? Okay, initially, the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission will look at lump sum payments to veterans who receive 10 or 20% disability payments. Those veterans currently receiving $112 or $218 a month. The buyouts would be based on life expectancy, with only a percentage of the total value offered. Approximately 30%. First they said 50 and then they got down to 30. For example, if a veteran gets $218 a month from the VA and has a life expectancy of 20 years, his total compensation would have been $52,320. The proposed buyouts would offer a cash settlement if they did it at 50% of $26,160, or if they did it at 30% of $15,696, and there are many, many veterans who would jump at this because they're not too well off at all, and they can use the money just to buy the staples to live on. Now, one of the main arguments for lump sum payments, besides saving the government money, is that the veteran can then invest his buyout and do much better financially than in the long run. However, the Center for Naval Analysis, who's researching this, says the literature does not support that theory and told the VDBC younger, less educated, and lower-ranking personnel would be more inclined to accept the VA lump sum offer, and funds received in lump sum payments are often spent on consumer goods rather than spent on long-term investments. Believe me, if people took this, they're not thinking of a long-term investment. The decision to take a long... The decision to take a lump sum payment...
We'll be right back in just a moment.
I'm sorry.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Arthur's talking about the veterans being talked into taking a lump sum, a payment at maybe 30% of what their lifetime disability payments would be. And, you know, there are a lot of people with the idea of somebody's going to give them $15,000 or $20,000 would take that without thinking so much for the future. So pick the story up there, Arthur.
Okay, now there's more questions than answers. Now here's a few of the potential problem areas. If a veteran service-connected condition worsened, would he be able to file a claim, or would the condition now be non-compensable? Many veterans will initially receive a 10% or 20% disability rating and then see it jump as high as 100% as they age and their particular condition worsens. Would the VA continue to treat the veteran for the condition even though he wasn't getting compensation? You can bet they wouldn't. Or would the condition now be considered not to exist? The cost savings to the government would be great, and the cost to the veteran would be catastrophic. Now, what about another condition that occurs that's secondary to the original service-connected condition? How would that fit in? Okay? An example would be a veteran who receives a disability, let's say for a bad knee, and as that knee gets worse with age, back problems can arise, and that could constitute a secondary disability that could be compensated. Would the VA stop at the 10 and 20% disability ratings? You can bet they wouldn't. Many feel that this would be just the beginning, and that once the door is open, all disability ratings would be up for a lump sum buyout.
But of course it would be up to the veterans whether he took it, wouldn't it?
Well, would the buyouts be retroactive, or would only new veterans fall under the plan? The largest savings for the government would be gained by including veterans currently receiving disability? And would the buyouts be mandatory or would they be optional? The savings for the government would be greatest with a mandatory buyout plan. This could be imposed on veterans. The biggest question of all is, how can you buy out a disability? Veterans receive disability compensation because their ability to perform everyday tasks has been diminished by wounds or injuries sustained while on active duty. The compensation paid by the VA is meant to make up for income lost during the disabilities. A lump sum payment is antithetical for the concept of ongoing compensation for an ongoing disability, and veterans and their families cannot underestimate the power being wielded by this Veterans Disability Benefits Commission. They are truly an instrument for radical changes in the VA disability system, and their recommendations could forever alter the system of veterans benefits in this country, leaving our veterans, their widows and children, with fewer benefits and less compensation. And is this what our veterans deserve? Veterans benefits are definitely not a gift. They are not a welfare program. They are earned through service to their country, and they must not be diminished in any way. Now, Washington watchers feel that the VDBC will approve the concept of lump sum buyouts, and we know the White House will approve, but will Congress fall into line? This is just another thing to think about at the polls, and the voters have just spoken at the polls, and we may be seeing some change. I don't know if we're going to see radical change, but I know we're going to be seeing some changes.
All right, fine. So anyway, it's still up in the air whether this is going to be a pursuit. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, of course, and you say all of the veterans organizations certainly oppose the idea.
Yeah, the veterans organizations are opposing the idea, but they're opposing the idea for one reason, because if there are no more veterans, there are no more veterans organizations.
Sure.
If there are no benefits, there are no more veterans. And have you heard about the Wayne Mattson Report, Dr. Stan?
No, why don't you tell us about the Wayne Mattson Report?
Okay, Wayne Mattson Report. A lot of people I know subscribe to this. We get them sending us the reports every once in a while. And this one dated November 8th, which was yesterday. Wayne Mattson Report is truly outraged by the corporate veterans organization support for a chicken hawk non-vet like Republican Peter Roskam over severely wounded and disabled Iraq war vet Tammy Duckworth. This young lady lost both her legs in a combat situation in Iraq, and she just ran for office in Illinois' 6th Congressional District. Now, Roskam won the House seat in a very close election, and the VFW did not back Tammy Duckworth, but backed Roskam. And this is how the VFW National Headquarters is explaining its disgraceful behavior. Tammy Duckworth is a brave woman who will continue to make a difference in the lives of others. But we cannot allow military service or VFW membership to be automatic endorsement qualifiers. And just because some of the old and overweight vets like to wear goofy caps and blazers festooned with self-awarded medals and pins doesn't mean that the editor here at the Mattson Report will automatically offer them any respect. Look, they can back whoever they want, but here's a lady who has paid her dues and lost both legs. And she would have made a great Congress lady.
Well, I think it tells you a little bit about the veterans of foreign wars. So obviously they had some sort of an arrangement with this congressman and whatever it may have been.
Oh, yeah. Now, something has happened in the Spokane Veterans Hospital. You may have gotten it in your papers in California, because I didn't hear anything about it in the East Coast papers, and then I started having people out there in California sending me some of their newspapers. Veteran dies after the VA staff calls 911, and this is from the Associated Press, the Spokane VA Hospital. A Spokane veteran of three wars, professional military man, died after collapsing in the parking lot of a veterans hospital where staffers called 911 instead of helping the man. Clinton L. Fuller had a friend take him to the VA Medical Center for treatment for asthma and emphysema when he collapsed mid-afternoon September 30th. This man who fought three wars was dying in front of the VA hospital, and nobody inside would help, said the Reverend Eugene Singleton, who drove Fuller. I thought a professional person, no matter who you are, who has taken an oath to save lives, would help. Now, medically, the patient was handled appropriately, said Joe Manley. He's the director of the VA center, which had stopped offering nighttime care and was now closing at 4:30 p.m. Can you imagine that? They close the hospital at 4:30 p.m. and do not take patients in after that. The patient arrived at our facility in respiratory distress, he said. The most skilled people we had went out to the patient, but you have to have the professional equipment to do the work. The procedure Fuller needed would have only required a tube being put down his throat to help him breathe. The timing, he said, had nothing to do with Fuller not being helped by the VA staff. Calling the fire department was quicker than getting the equipment. What equipment? It's a rubber or plastic tube. And bringing it back, or finding someone who could offer medical assistance. Singleton often drove Fuller, 83 years old, to the VA hospital, where he was a regular patient. On September 30th, Fuller's wife, Marilyn, called Singleton to again make the trip. After I got there, it took him a while to get out of the house. He brought a little bag with his Bible and such. He wanted to go to the hospital to be treated for his asthma and emphysema, said Singleton, who is a reverend at St. Matthew Institutional Baptist Church. Nearing the hospital, around 4:35 p.m., Singleton said his friend slumped over onto his shoulder and he couldn't wake him. Singleton ran into the urgent care center and yelled for help before returning with a wheelchair for Fuller. A security guard came outside and said, the center closed at 4:30. We can't help you, but they called 911. Paramedics arrived within minutes and took Fuller to Deaconess Medical Center, where he died in an hour and 10 minutes after collapsing. Despite serving in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, Fuller was disrespected by VA hospital workers, said Singleton, who, as a veteran himself, said he'd never see care at the hospital. I don't want to be treated like that, he said. I get emotional every time I think about it. The VA hospital, which underwent, get this, Dr. Stan, in 2005, they underwent a $3.2 million expansion. They eliminated the center's nighttime hours in July, right after they got the money. They eliminated the nighttime hours. Hospital officials said very few patients visited after 4:30 p.m. And you know what I say about this, Dr. Stan? Close them down. Shut them down. They got $3.2 million, and they still do this to veterans. They don't deserve to stay open.
Okay, fine. Well, now, if there's anybody else out there, first of all, I want you to get your telephone number out so people will know how to get in touch with you. But if anybody out there in the listening audience would like to talk to Arthur or has a question about the veterans' disability payments, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But how can people get in touch with you and your organization, Veterans for Constitutional Law?
Okay, we're very easy to reach. We can be called at the 631 area, 474-4261. If you're having a problem with the VA, Department of Defense, or anybody in the government that's denying you benefits, we would like to hear from you, and we may very well be able to do something for you. But you'd have to contact us. Now, if you want to write us, we're located at Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. My name is Arthur Birnklaum, Executive Director. We're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. That's 112 Jefferson Avenue, New York, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. And you could also reach us online, but generally it's easier to do it by mail because one weekend we had 11,000. The computer went down. We had 11,000 responses one weekend. Yeah, I hesitate to have them reach us online because we'll get back to you faster by mail or by telephone than we will online.
All right, very good. And of course, Arthur really spends full time working to help veterans, and you need it because when you get trapped in this system, why, of course, you just don't quite know how or what to do. And this is what Arthur and the men who work with him do full time. And certainly, nobody's paid there at your organization, are they?
No, we get a salary of $1 a year.
And so many of the veterans organizations, really, they get very, very substantial salaries, but you always wonder who they're really subservient to, because so many of the veterans administrations get free, office space and office equipment and telephone services, and they get a great deal of material from the veterans administration, but believe me, who pays the piper calls the tune.
Well,
and when you're taking money from the Veterans Administration, are you really going to speak out against them? Are you really going to help the veterans? Or are you simply going to go through the token movements of doing something all the time, accomplishing nothing, just like the VA?
Exactly. Here's a statistic that's a very shocking statistic, Dr. Stan. One in four veterans on the War on Terror are claiming disability. Now, this came out of Washington, D.C., October 10th, 2006. One in four veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are filing disability claims, according to records released. This came directly out of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, and they would not release this until we hit them with a Freedom of Information Act, an FOIA, after 9 months of denying their existence, and it was posted on the National Security Archive website. The VA responded to the archive's original January 2006 FOIA request for documents about the number of disability benefits claimed by veterans from the current war in Iraq by claiming that no documents existed, apparently because the reports concerned the global war on terrorism rather than being limited to the Iraq war. Notably, one of the reports realized that the global war on terrorism is the military name for the current wars in or around Afghanistan and Iraq. A similar report was released in December 2005 detailing Gulf War veterans' benefit activity. An updated copy of this report was released in March 2006, only after the archive administratively appealed to the VA's no documents claims and advised the VA that it was prepared to file a lawsuit. Did the agency manage to locate the records? They claimed they couldn't locate the records before. Now, one is a January 30th, 2006 document, compensation and pension benefit activity among 464,144 veterans deployed in the global war on terror, and it reports that more than 150,000 deployed Operation Enduring Freedom Afghanistan and Operation Iraqi Freedom, Iraqi veterans out of more than 560,000 veterans of the global war on terrorism, filed disability compensation and pension benefits claims with the Veterans Benefits Administration. That's the VBA. The other is a July 20th, 2006 document, compensation and pension benefit activity among veterans of the global war on terrorism. Veterans groups have criticized the VA for using emergency appropriations to fund veterans' benefits rather than realistically planning and budgeting for the veterans' needs. According to the Veterans for America, the newly released data suggests official estimates dramatically understate the future cost of the current Iraq and Afghanistan wars. It is the current trend. If the current trend continues, then the VA could receive as many as 400,000 disability claims from the 1.6 million deployed active duty and reserve service members in the global war on terrorism. Jonathan Powers, Associate Director of Veterans for America and an Iraq War veteran, warned, VA has a backlog And the claims process is only going to get worse and worse unless the VA takes action now. The VA has no plan or funding in process and pay existing and future claims to ensure our veterans promptly receive the disability benefits and health care that they earned. It would be great if the VA had all the funding necessary for returning troops with disability due to time serving in the military. Better still, if they could find a streamlined method for the claims process. What these reports don't express is how horribly overburdened our military really is and how abused these troops are by their government. One out of every four will have a disability after service, and that's what's left after the death toll. One in four in a war that has no clear strategy, estimated end in sight, or even a clear vision of what winning the war wins. And if you want to support your troops, support an end to a government that just wings it with the lives of your sons and daughters.
Dan, you're calling from Houston. Do you have a quick question for our guest?
Yes, sir. God bless you for what you're doing, and no one couldn't be overestimated. I go to the DAV meetings, and I feel kind of guilty. I don't have an arm or leg missing. I just have asbestos in my lungs because you're going to kill me anyway. But at least I'm not able, you know, I'm not able to move around. And they talk at the meetings, guys going back to World War II, how the government doesn't give a flip about the veterans. They just stand up and say so at the meeting. They meet with their senators and their congressmen. They go to conventions, and they say it doesn't mean anything. You just go anywhere because it's going to go and get out of town. But as far as anybody in the government, Democrat or Republican, couldn't care less of a Democrat.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, you're going to be shocked at some news I'm going to give you here.
So one more thing, if I could say, please. The DAV, sure. The DAV magazine, DAV.com, is $10 a year. If you help those veterans pay $10 of your life, out of your livelihood once a year for this magazine and advertising if you have a business, you'll do more for injured veterans than anything else the stinking country does for anybody.
Okay.
Now, DAV.com.
All right.
Now, let me just answer you on this, okay? We have a law that a bill that's up in Congress, H.R. 4914. It's legislation that was introduced in the House and the Senate. Now, the Senate has passed it unanimously. The House has not passed it, and this would give a veteran the right to hire his own attorney for his claim. And these bills would amend Title 38, the U.S. Code, and remove the limitations on attorney representation of claimants for veterans' benefits and proceedings before the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. The DAV is opposing this, and they are asking the House Veterans Affairs Committee to boondoggle this bill and not to pass it because they're afraid of losing their protected legal turf. We feel the DAV is not the friend for veteran, but they are their mortal enemy when it comes to getting veterans' disability and rights. They are coming out and they're saying that this should not be passed, and we don't need lawyers. We got the DAV representing you, but let's look at it this way. Only 4% of veterans applying for their disabilities ever win with the current system now. The system cries to have legal representation for veterans, and the DAV is doing everything they can to block it. And that is
unconscionable.
We're going
to have to let you know we're out of time, but thanks very much, and thank you, Dan, for calling from Texas. And Arthur, good
thank
night.
You.
God bless you. We'll look forward to talking to you here again next month or so.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was Arthur Bernclaw, of course, from Veteran for Constitutional Law. And there's a lot of things going on. The veterans need representation. We need to remember their sacrifice. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I certainly hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and support us and helping us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, trying to get people to understand so many of the things that are going on. So if you'd like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will go to our webpage at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Pull down the newsletters and read and study the newsletters because there's a tremendous amount of information there. You have our permission to copy them and disseminate them. you have a permission to copy and disseminate any of our 4 tape sets or videos. Many of them are available up on the Internet. You can watch them for nothing. But if you do want to copy them and distribute them, as long as you're not making a profit, well, you certainly have our blessing. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and begin to get an idea of what it is that energizes these people who would destroy our nation. If you have not yet seen some of the material that we've put together on the Security and Prosperity Partnership, we've got a great new 4-tape set that simply goes into this whole idea of the North American community. And, of course, what's basically called the North American community, the demise of national sovereignty. You need to get that. You need to get our 4-tape set on immigration. You need to get the book, Minuteman, written by Jerome Corsi. Excellent material there. And then, of course, you need to get our material. We have a 4-tape set on the impending police state, on globalism, the secret threat, the changing church, medical myths, and the truth about the Holocaust. These are all new great 4-tape sets that supplement so many of the older 4-tape sets that we have. And then, of course, if you really want to be effective, I think the most significant thing we can do right now is to tell the American people the truth about what happened on 9/11. We carry a wonderful book. It's called The Terror Timeline by Paul Thompson. We carry a 4-tape set which has a 2-hour interview with Paul Thompson, a 2-hour interview with a Jimmy Walter who spent $8 million of his own money running ads in New York City to let the American people know, or at least the people of New York know, that those buildings that came down that day were controlled demolition. And Osama bin Laden, ladies and gentlemen, over there in the cave, didn't bring those buildings down. If you have any questions, let me suggest the videos, which we do carry, Terror Timeline, 9/11, Press for the Truth, which is the story of the Jersey girls, four widows who lost their husbands in the World Trade Center, who wanted to know why the president congratulated the intelligence agency and George Tenet, director of the CIA, for a job well done right after 9/11, when 3,000 Americans were dead. Why there are over 1,150 bodies that have never been found among the 2,700 people who perished there at the Twin Towers. Why nobody has looked into how it was that on that very morning there were all sorts of military exercises that were designed to confuse the people who were supposed to be guarding our country. Why there were all sorts of false images on the screens. Why the military exercises included hijackings of planes. And why it was that the man in charge at Langley Air Force Base refused to send planes, you know, to protect the Pentagon, and what really happened at the Pentagon, and why the government is concealing all of the videotapes they have. They've only released one of multiple videotapes that they had that showed what happened to the Pentagon. Why are they concealing it? And why have they objected to the investigations, the Joint Intelligence Committee investigation and the 9/11 investigation, and why all of those investigations were run by members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening. People.
afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation, it is Thursday, the 9th of November, 2006. And there's a lot of folks throwing confetti and balloons into the air, jumping for joy for numerous reasons. And, I think it's maybe there's cause for celebration, but it should be very cautious celebration at that, you know. It's the old devil you know versus the devil you don't know. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm referring to the